Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Welcome in to another edition of the Under Center podcast here on NBC Sports Chicago. I'm JJ Stankovic, joined by John Moon Mullen. Moon, you're fond of saying that there's no offseason in the NFL, and certainly this week with quite a bit of news hitting, at least as it goes with the Bears. Let's start off with Josh Sitton. The Bears released Josh Sitton this week. They're going to save about $8 million in cap room, according to SpotTrack. Sitton's 31, was in a Pro Bowl a year ago, still played in 13 games last year. You can maybe say his effectiveness waned a little bit, but still a really solid offensive lineman. But the Bears cut him in an effort to probably get younger at this position. What was your kind of first impression when you saw that the Bears are going to release him? Was it of sort of surprise that they were, A, making this move so quickly, or B, that they were going to kind of change the offensive line in front of Trubisky? Or did it kind of make sense to you? Did you kind of expect this move to come down the pike?
Yeah, actually, I did. I probably should have gone a little stronger. No, the reason is kind of twofold. One is obviously getting younger. A guy who's starting to have, minor, albeit, but there's no minor health problems in the NFL. The ankle injury. But there's also a situation developing on Bears' offensive line as they go about trying to build the rest of this team. They have money tied up. They have big contracts at left tackle in Charles Leno. They have a guard, big money tied up at with Kyle Long. And you can only pay so many, even with the salary cap going up, you can only have so many guys. And I don't know that Josh Sitton was an $8 million guard. One thing I couldn't find out was whether or not they asked him to maybe take a pay cut, which most guys dislike, and they say let me go on the market and maybe get one more big payday. But the situation on the offensive line where they already have a couple of big money contracts. So Jerry Angelo used to say you can only really pay two O linemen, a quarterback, a running back, and a receiver. Generally, I mean, obviously you're going to spend some money on Bobby Massey and so forth, but Cody Whitehair is a bargain, and they're going to have to do something in free agency you really almost can't rely on addressing a position, starting position with the draft and a rookie coming in. So, Sitton, there was just a lot, too many breadcrumbs leading him out of town unless he would take a haircut to get his salary down into where the Bears could manage it.
I want to go back to the thing you mentioned about Jerry Angelo, where you can only pay two offensive linemen, a running back, a quarterback, and a receiver. As things set up for the Bears right now, Trubisky is an absolute bargain.
Yep.
Jordan Howard, bargain. Tariq Cohen, bargain. So does this – and, Bobby Massey, I think, is somewhere around $5.5 or $6 million next year. So you are then paying three offensive linemen, essentially. But – having Trubisky still in his rookie contract, having Jordan Howard on a very inexpensive rookie contract, same for Tariq Cohen, can that free up some more money for receiver, which is something I want to get into a little bit later here, but could that maybe allow the Bears, if you're looking at the offense, if you're kind of just siloing the offense here, could that maybe free up a little bit more money now that you have kind of jettisoned one of the offensive linemen? It seems like that money would go toward a wide receiver or potentially a tight end if you jettison Deion Sims and save some cap room there. There seem to be some avenues for the Bears to kind of tweak that equation, given the inexpensiveness of Trubisky, Howard, Cohen, Cody Whitehair on the offense.
Yeah, I think, too, that you also have to, you mentioned you guys like Cohen and Howard and Trubisky in particular, or even let's throw in Adam Shaheen. Let's say there's a real lot of upside there. Well, those are four guys who are going to be your starters when your team, hopefully in a year or two for the Bears, when you know there's the second stage ignites and you're ready to go. You look at a guy like Josh Sitton, you say, you know what, he's probably not going to be, we're going to have to do something at that point. Mm-hmm. So you may see them go into this offseason, either drafting a guy, or you kind of need to also get, you know, what's your timetable for getting good? You know, we see teams like Dallas who have, you know, four of their offensive linemen in particular, first-rate stuff, and they're all young. So, you know, you want to kind of get your guys on a similar timetable as well as a payroll. So the guys aren't just as well as, you know, as soon as Mitch Trubisky's ready, you know, this team is really ready to take the next step. Is there an issue then? But to your point, if I'm giving, let's say, $8, $9 million to a guard, maybe I want to invest it in a younger guy, 26-year-old, you know, maybe, can they just start rolling off names? But
Andrew Norwell.
Yeah, Andrew Norwell, good example. I mean, you know, a guy who was, you know, you know, he's not looking for generational wealth, but if I had to spend $8 or $9 million, would you spend it on Josh Sitton?
Right.
Really nice player, but it's probably his last year, year or two. Or would I get a guy who's going to be with me? He's kind of like right in there with Leno, with Whitehair, mm-hmm. with Kyle Long. You got a bunch of guys that are, you know, if they stay healthy, you could be doing something in four or five, for the next 4 or 5 years. So, you know, a lot of little, this is the kind of stuff they have to fold into those decisions. Not just the money, but to your point, if you get a good, you know, a good price on Norwell, or you end up, you know, Eric Kush or somebody, or they draft, mm-hmm. or able to do something with the draft, right now there's money that's freed up for a receiver. You know, we're talking about, you know, obviously Kevin White, you could argue is a bust at this point, albeit for the health reasons, but they have to do something and they can't address it all in the draft. So yeah, they
right.
You got to move money around, even when the cap's gone up to almost 180 mil or just short of that, I believe.
So the name that is obviously out there draft-wise is Quentin Nelson. I covered him at Notre Dame. He's just an absolute brawler. I can't say enough good things about Quentin Nelson. I think I'm one of a million voices who has been praising Quentin Nelson so far in this draft mm-hmm. process. But you wrote a really good piece today on NBC Sports Chicago about kind of the problem with Quentin Nelson. And guards don't go in the top 10 very often. And the right. ones who do haven't really panned out. Jonathan Cooper, who's right. going to be a free agent, one of those guys for Dallas, where he was 7th overall, I believe, never really amounted to a whole lot. Same goes for Chance Warmack, who is, I believe, 10th right. overall. And I look at Quentin Nelson, and I see a plug-and-play Pro Bowler from day one. But... Mm-hmm. Guard is not tackle. I mean, that's kind of the calculation Carolina's having right now with Andrew Norwell of, like,
yes.
do we want to pay him tackle money and franchise him so we make sure we keep him? But tackle money is not worth it for a guard all the time. So
right. And, you know, Carolina's a great example, JJ, bringing up. I mean, they've got money tied up in Matt Khalil and mm-hmm. Ryan Khalil. You know, you can only pay so many guys in a position group. So that might work to the Bears' benefit. Can they afford a third guy making, you know, top five at his position money? I don't know. Those are some weighty decisions. But yeah, if you could, here's the thing. I think as we've mock drafted, it is a really good name for those things. Mock draft.
Yeah.
And I really do think there's a very good chance, pending free agency, that the Bears get Quentin Nelson. But I don't think they take him at 8 for just as, you know, we talked about, you know, guys like. That's a position that just has missed too many times, and it's not the kind of guy. I use the term in that story, kind of a stat player. Not the stats mm-hmm. you're not out for stats, but you want a guy who can come in and individually make a game-turning play. Again, a guard off, not to diminish any position on the field, but is it a receiver who can score a touchdown? Is it a quarterback who can throw a touchdown? Is it a running back, or is it, you know, a defensive end who is a strip sack? It's hard to justify spending that kind of draft capital at that position. If you told me that, you know, here's one to throw out to, you know, to throw back to you, or if you knew that, you say, plug in Pro Bowler rookie year, great. If you could guarantee me that he's David DeCastro, Zach Martin, mm-hmm. Alan Faneca, or, you know, Steve Hutchinson, or Kyle Long, I might be tempted to use that 8th pick on him. But, like, getting back to the guys we're talking about, I don't know if I could guarantee these, maybe, is he Chance Warmack, you know, one of those guys who comes out of can't-miss guy out of Alabama who just misses. So I don't know. It's just, and if you're going to gamble, would you gamble a guard? Or would you gamble at wide receiver or, you know, a pass rusher? I think I'd tend to go to the stat guys, I called them in that piece.
Well, in terms of the guarantees, the thing the Bears have going for them is that Harry Heastand's on the staff. He's the guy who developed Quentin Nelson at Notre Dame. He's also the guy that Zach Martin stayed a fifth year at Notre Dame to play under because he wanted to be coached another year by Harry Heastand. And I was talking to someone at Notre Dame about this because I was just curious about how they viewed Martin and Nelson. And Nelson is far and away the more athletic, the more physically imposing player than Zach Martin. What they said about Zach Martin was, you know, and this is something that I kind of knew covering him too, but just the intangibles that Zach Martin brought from his time at Notre Dame to the NFL made him an immediate Pro Bowler. And Quentin Nelson, it's not that Quentin Nelson doesn't have the intangibles, but if we're on a chart, you know, my hand is way above my head for Zach Martin, and it's like slightly above my head for Quentin Nelson in terms of the intangibles coming out of college. Now, those could grow. You could say, okay, we're going to give him another year or four with Harry Heastand, and he's going to turn into this Pro Bowler, and we've got Alan Faneca. Then you make that pick. I think of the teams who are picking in the top 10, the Bears, just because of Harry Heastand, are probably the most likely to take Nelson. Or alternatively, it could work against Quentin Nelson, and Harry Heastand could go, you know, he's a really great player, but I'm not going to sit here and bang my fist for a guard going in the top 10 because that is historically a reach. So that's going to be interesting how that plays out. And also how the Bears kind of view some of the other guards at the Combine starting next week, whether it's an Isaiah Wynn, a guy they can maybe trade down into the teens or the 20s to draft from Georgia, or like Will Hernandez from UTEP, maybe a second-round guy. There are some options out there for the Bears that they don't necessarily have to go guard at number 8, and they don't necessarily have to go Quentin Nelson if he's on the board there.
Yeah, and it's... Well, there have been so many can't-miss, oh, my God, this is the guy who's going to remake that position. And, you know, Robert Gallery, you know, second overall pick. Tony Mandarich, or there's another one. You know, and both those guys ended up bust the tackle, ended up just kind of hanging on, you know, playing for a while and not terribly at guard, but were absolute busts at tackle. But, you mentioned Heastand, and you were around to watch that team and the kind of linemen they turn out. If I'm going to take a chance on a lineman, it would be guys from Michigan or Notre Dame or guys who are pretty well coached. You're not going to get a bust. They kind of come in with a nice floor. But, you know, I was with Jerry, not to harken back to Jerry again, but I thought he was kind of a conservative drafter. He would draft, okay, how bad is this guy going to be? And almost like picking safe. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure that Ryan Pace is that way. I think he's willing to go for guys who are going to be those impact guys. He wants his head coach, you know, his new head coach to be successful. If I'm him and I'm looking back at what, you know, again, not that the pass is always an indicator, but Ryan was part of that, you know, the Saints organization when they won a Super Bowl with no offensive lineman on the roster drafted higher than the second round. Mm-hmm. And their Pro Bowl guards, you know, Carl Nix and Jari Evans and the tackle Jermon Bushrod, who stopped over here in Chicago. But to my point, and maybe you can talk to this, Harry Heastand is the kind of guy I might say, you know what, give me a Cody Whitehair in the second round, and I think Harry can turn him into something. He'll turn that offensive line from five fingers into a fist, and I'll go ahead and I'll spend number one on a pass rusher, somebody who's going to get the ball for my quarterback, and let Harry, not that he's a miracle worker necessarily, but you've probably seen him take some projects and turn them into something at Notre Dame.
Yeah, you know, I can think of, you know, Nick Martin came in, Zach's younger brother. I think it was a 3-star recruit. And, you know, he wasn't just kind of a layup, oh, we're going to take him because he's Zach's brother. But he turned him from kind of a mediocre, middling interior lineman into being a top 50 draft pick of the Houston Texans. I've seen Harry Heastand do that, and then you also see him take a Mike McGlinchey, a highly regarded recruit, and turn him into a top, you know, probably first-round pick. Same with, like, a Ronnie Stanley. What I'd be interested in is if the Bears do go the free agent route and they sign someone who's maybe, if, you know, you're kind of using outside rankings in that, like, 20 to 30 range of guards, and you get him in the building with Harry Hiestand and turn him into a top 10 to 20 guy, that could be a really interesting route for Pace to go, because then you're maybe paying this guy maybe $4 or $5 million at most, and then you can then allocate those funds towards signing multiple wide receivers or going big at cornerback or something along those lines. I think there are a lot of options. What I do think is that next week the combine is really this first hurdle for Ryan Pace to really start to focus in on what his offseason plan is going to be, not just for the offensive line, but if he comes into the combine and is blown away by Calvin Ridley and they go into stealth mode on Calvin Ridley and then draft him, maybe they don't go out and they try to sign the best receiver on the market, which also is not exactly there aren't a lot of top-end receivers right now, which we'll get into after the break here. But, yeah, I just think a lot is going to come into focus here at the Combine next week. And, you know, whether or not Quentin Nelson is worth a top-10 pick is another thing that's going to come into focus. How well Quentin Nelson tests is going to be important for the Bears' front office.
Yeah, and this is one of those things where, you know, guys like Jimmy Johnson who just used to be in the draft room and say, don't talk to me about a guy from the combine. Talk to me about his production. Tell me something about him. And yeah, so much of the combine, unfortunately or fortunately, whichever, for the players, is based on measurables. And offensive line, there's one position where it's almost like, I'm not sure that really matters. It might be offensive line. And, you know, because that person's going to be part of a unit. So somebody who runs a 4.87, whoa, at 312 pounds, he ran a 4.9, whoa. Well, I don't know how many times you want your offensive lineman running 40 yards, but yes, guys may go up the board for all, again, not all the wrong reasons, but a more athletic tackle is going to look better than kind of the mauler that you might want to guard. Mm-hmm. So it really makes it hard to judge based on the combine with those, because the bench press doesn't.
Right.
You know, if the Super Bowl is going to be decided by a pose down, you know, weightlifting pose down or something, okay. But yeah, I think it's very hard. And also, you know, big picture with the draft, the funny part of it is you're building your organization through the draft, but each year the draft almost represents what you do after free agency. Well, it is what you do after free agency. So at number eight, if they knew they could get Quentin Nelson, would they risk? Let's say he is that guy. Would you wait until the draft, assuming that you can get this guy? I don't know. That's a strategic question. You know, Ryan Pace didn't have to worry about that last year with the third pick overall, and really knew he could get one of two guys that he really wanted. I'm not sure the Bears had that luxury at number eight.
I think that's a really good point, and that's a good place to send us into the break here on the Under Center podcast on NBC Sports Chicago.
Crank up the heat and turn on STL on NBC Sports Chicago. Host David Kaplan brings his no-nonsense opinion to the table in a half hour on the topics that are trending with our teams.
We got the most mismanaged basketball team in the history of the world.
Which franchise made the gutsiest draft day move?
I think Pack wanted to do this, and he finally got his way.
Sports Talk Live, presented by the Chevy Silverado. Weeknights at 6 on NBC Sports Chicago.
All right, we're back here on the Under Center podcast on NBCSportsChicago.com. The Bears have a window now that opened this week, closes next month on March 6th to either apply or not apply the franchise tag or a transitional tag on Kyle Fuller. And this is not an easy decision for the Bears. There are so many layers to this involving Kyle Fuller. So let's just start with Kyle Fuller and kind of his profile. Because for all the good that Kyle Fuller did last year, he was only one of four cornerbacks to have 20 or more pass breakups. He, you know, just was a really solid run defender and did some of his best work against really good receivers like Julio Jones. I remember in that first week, I came away really impressed with what Kyle Fuller did. But Kyle Fuller missed 2016 after having his knee scoped, and he didn't come back that year. He was inconsistent in 2014 and 2015. And if you're Ryan Pace, do you look at him as a one-year sort of flash in the pan or a guy who finally figured it out in year four and now is ascending. And if you were to sign him to a long-term contract, you might get a bargain out of it by the end of it. There's so many different calculations to make, but specifically with Kyle Fuller and how you're projecting out his future, I would think the Bears project him out more on the end of a guy who's ascending, a guy who kind of really figured it out last year. You know, you listen to the way that Bears coaches talked about his film study last year and how almost addicted he was to his iPad, and just the level of confidence that just kept growing and growing and growing in him and never really waned, even when he had that bad game against Green Bay where Devontae Adams beat him a couple times. Kyle Fuller came right back and played pretty well after that. Just a guy who I think the Bears are going to look at and say he's worth a multi-year extension. Do you kind of agree with that, Moon?
You know, I find this kind of player such a conundrum. And, you know, JJ, we saw a couple of these kind of guys, and I'm just going to generalize about this, the kind of guys who, when they get to a contract year, they light it up. You know, if the year before, guys who have one good year, like Quentin Demps, not one good, but guys who had lighted up a year before, as they're in a contract year.
Marcus Cooper,
exactly. And so, but let's be fair to not lump him in with those, because Kyle Fuller is a young guy, and I think probably is an ascending guy. If this were 12 months ago, coming off of the memory death, that kind of a supposedly minor knee surgery and never played, would you risk? It's kind of like almost the Alshon Jeffrey syndrome. You know, really? I mean, not he had surgery, so it's not an insignificant injury. But I think one of the biggest things that might have happened for the Bears last offseason is Kyle Fuller playing golf with Vic Fangio.
Yeah,
I think there was a connection. I don't know. Would you, having seen what we did from Quentin Demps, kind of a bust for the money, Marcus Cooper, definitely a bust for the money. Guys who had come off like three or four interception a year for Demps and a six-pick year for Cooper or whatever, and then they just fall off the cliff. You know, would they be risking generational money or franchise money on Kyle Fuller, who really wasn't all that good the 2 years before that?
Right.
I don't know. I mean, and yet, in some respect, I'd say, you know, if you're asking me to vote, I almost have to, because I need a corner. We need cornerbacks. We can't be too rich, too thin, or have too many cover corners. I don't know. Would you go long-term with him?
I mean, I'm not the one who's spending George McCaskey's money, but I do think that the way that the offseason sets up right now, if you take kind of a larger view of the free agent market, Jarvis Landry's not on it, and he may not have even been a fit. Allen Robinson probably won't be on it. Sammy Watkins probably won't be on it. You're not going to splash at wide receiver. There's not that $14 million guy out there who you can go out and say, we just got Mitchell Trubisky's number one receiver. There are some guys out there, you know, Paul Richardson, Albert Wilson, some of these guys who are good fits, but are not going to be, they're not going to be your big splash guys.
Right.
Outside linebacker and edge rusher, those guys never make it to free agency. The top level, DeMarcus Lawrence, those guys. Maybe like Atlanta lets Adrian Claiborne go, but he's a 4-3 guy. Maybe he won't want to play in a 3-4. I almost think that you go big at cornerback, because that is a position of need, and it has a pretty deep class with Fuller, Tremaine Johnson, Breshad Breeland, Malcolm Butler, E.J. Gaines. You have quite a few guys out there who you can go out and you could theoretically let Kyle Fuller walk and then go out and sign two big-name free agent corners. You could keep Kyle Fuller and still make a run at Tremaine Johnson, for all we know. Or you keep Kyle Fuller, you go out and you get maybe a more modest guy like Breshad Breeland, E.J. Gaines, but those guys are still going to be making $8, $9, $10 million a year. I just think cornerback is the position that's setting up for the Bears to make the biggest splash right now. And I think you can start with Kyle Fuller and feel pretty good about it. That being said, this is only my evaluation. The evaluation that matters is the internal one that Vic Fangio, Ryan Pace, Ed Donatell, and the entire scouting department for the Bears, that's the one that they're going to make. They, unlike Quentin Demps and Marcus Cooper, who, had, I think, 10 combined interceptions in 2016, the Bears know what they have in Kyle Fuller, and they're either in or out. You know, we were kind of talking about this over text about the transition tag on Fuller, and you kind of made the point, like, well, you're either in or out on a guy. The transition tag kind of signals you don't really know where you're going. And yeah. I don't know how the Bears could really not know where they're going with Kyle Fuller right now. I think they have a pretty good idea of the kind of player he is, the kind of player they think he can be. And that'll be pretty evident in how they feel whether or not they put the franchise tag on him.
Yeah, I really good point. You know, something we too, just pulling the camera back for a little wider angle. Wouldn't we all like to see, I mean, just as an organizationally fan-based or whatever, covering the team, wouldn't you like to see the team hold on to its own or have made a good, and again, even though Fuller wasn't Ryan Pace's pick, you know, you saw the Green Bay is, you know, obviously once you get the quarterback right, but Green Bay is so good about keeping their own guys, and New England, they find guys that fit, or certain teams, Pittsburgh, they find guys that fit, and they keep them. You find it's the same names you see over and over. I would just be so interested, or just such an unusual thing for the Bears to keep one of their guys. You know, If I were starting, I would probably, you know, Trumaine Johnson, I like a lot because he's played almost every game, almost all of his career. Yep. So, which is the one concern I have with Fuller, having seen, you know, just what happened to him in 2016. I guess if I'm going to spend money, I'd kind of like to feel like I can spend it on my own guys. Mm-hmm. And something clicked last year. I might be tempted to gamble on a guy who really stepped up, who might have had a real nice connection with my D coordinator, who hopefully his mind is right. Because we've seen Kyle, is there a guy we'd like to talk to less in the locker room than Kyle Ford? Not too many of them. Not that that's
important. But even as the season went on, I kind of started to enjoy talking to Kyle Fuller because you could talk football with him.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's not a guy who is outwardly, you know, aggressive and, you know, in his disdain of media, but he doesn't have a lot of patience for, like, dumb questions. But you could have a pretty decent conversation about football with him, which sort of turned a light on for me of, like, well, this guy's confident in his abilities because I'm just standing here having a pretty good conversation about, you know, a certain aspect of football with him. So maybe that's something that, you know, we don't really, it's hard to garner a lot into a guy's mentality from media stuff, but maybe that's something that the Bears see every day in Kyle Fuller. They see that confidence. And, you know, look, you talk about rewarding your own. The Bears did that with Charles Leno, who was a guy who wasn't a Ryan Pace pick, and they rewarded him. They rewarded Akeem Hicks, who then went out and had a great season, rewarding the Bears for rewarding him. I wouldn't be surprised if soon down the pike, Eddie Goldman gets rewarded or Adrian Amos gets rewarded with that second contract, you know, obviously not right now, but, you know, come training camp. I think that's something that Ryan Pace wants to start doing. He just didn't have a whole lot of guys to reward early on in his tenure.
Yeah, and I think that's a really big deal. Then you get guys who have bought into something, and I think especially, maybe I mentioned Amos, and well, I thought, didn't we kind of think going into last season training, I wasn't sure he's going to make the team.
Yep.
You know what? He had 1,800 snaps in his career before that with no interceptions.
Yep.
I mean, you and I, we, one of us could have lucked into one by that. But yeah, all of a sudden, something, that little light starts to go on, and I want to keep my own because then this is the continuity that I think is kind of underappreciated. People that are come into a defense and using the Kyle Fuller case. Well, if Fuller is here, he's had 3 years of Vic Fangio. Eddie Goldman's had 3 years of Vic Fangio. Amos has had a couple of years. All these guys, they're in place. Now somebody, they come up with a draft choice, and you've had Leonard Floyd for a couple of years. Whoever's coming in now is coming into the flow of, you've got a continuity situation that everybody, they not only do they see how to be a professional, but they know the system. And they're getting a lot of guys helping them. So, you know, to lose Kyle Fuller after what they've invested in him time-wise would be a setback. So I'm with you. Long story, do we think he's going to get franchised? I think if he does, I think the end game for that is for both sides. I think they both want to get a longer-term deal. And I really wish I had a better feel for whether they think he's worth that risk. They certainly didn't think it was worth the risk for Alshon Jeffrey, whether he wanted to be here or not. But I think the little light went on, I think, with Amos and Fuller last year, and that's an important thing for the Bears going forward.
Yeah, absolutely, and I'm sure we'll get more answers from Ryan Pace next week when he talks to the media on Wednesday. Moon, you and I are going to do a podcast from Indianapolis after that, so keep an eye out for that next Wednesday, and we will talk to you from Indianapolis and the Combine next week. Thanks, Moon.
Yep, will do.